So, hello. I'm David Black. I am one of the directors of Ruby Central, which is, as many of you I think know, a nonprofit foundation in the United States that's devoted to putting on Ruby events and supporting Ruby initiatives and community-driven things and so forth. I'm also director of Ruby Power and Light, which is my own company. And I am going to talk to you today about the subject of per-object behavior in Ruby. I wanted to just say a little, just quickly, a couple of words of, history or something about this conference, because I'm so amazed. I was at the first Yoruko, which I think was 2004. In fact, I take indirect credit for its existence because I had raised, after we had the first conference in America, after we had the second conference, I raised the question on the German mailing list of why there had not been as many Europeans at our second conference, and was it because it was on the West Coast, and should we think about that? The response was, hey, why don't we start one over here in Europe? And they did, so this is it. So I have a slightly, sort of indirectly paternal feeling about the event, and it's really great. I mean, our first Ruby conference in America, we had 33 people. They included Matt's and Dave Thomas and Jim Wyrick and Chad Fowler. I mean, it was, a really kind of great bunch. But anyway, things have really grown a lot. It's kind of amazing to me. All right, per-object behavior in Ruby, which is to say the ways in which a particular object can acquire and use behaviors all of its own that are not necessarily shared by other objects of its class. Now, you may wonder, what makes me such an authority on this? Well, I'll tell you. I have been accused by no less a light than Ryan Zen Spider Davis, whom some of you may know, of being obsessed with singleton methods. So he may be right, he may be wrong. It is one of my favorite parts of Ruby, the fact that this can happen at all and the ways in which it happens. I wanted to organize a talk around five questions about per-object behavior, and there's a little bit of flex time built in. There's a couple of demos, sort of see how the time goes. I certainly want to leave time for questions a little bit, at least at the end. The five questions are, what is its rationale? In other words, why is it that Ruby lets you differentiate two objects that are of the same class as to their behavior and their methods and their interface? Second, how is it implemented? I'm not going to go into sort of source code. This is kind of a high-level question, or at least really a high-level answer. How do you do it? Some techniques that some of you may know, some of you may not. I'll just go over some of the ways in which you can make objects be differentiated. When should you do it? Kind of a best practices question, and I'll try to give you some good advice on that. And what are its ramifications? It's a slightly open-ended question, but one where I'll just try to wrap up what I've said and what we've looked at and talked about. So let's start with the rationale. Dave Thomas said something interesting at a recent conference. They're all a blur in my mind. I think it was RailsConf last year or some such, or maybe it was, whatever, RailsConf Europe, I'm not sure. He said it's object-oriented, not class-oriented. In other words, he was saying that the term is object-oriented, not class-oriented. And I think that's true in general, and it's a good reminder, and it's particularly true in Ruby. I look at classes in Ruby as a mechanism for launching objects into Ruby space. I don't think of classes as something that sort of constrain the future of their objects. And in any case, it's really the objects that are kind of the things you're dealing with. There's a lot of talk about object-oriented design and how it models the real world and so forth. I would kind of part company with that somewhat. I think, for one thing, if I were going to model the world as I see it in a program language design, it would be procedural. There would be lots of bugs. There would be lots of exceptions raised all the time. I mean, the real world isn't that great a model for programming. But anyway, and Matt's, just a couple of quotes here from Matt's, and one of them, Because the subject comes up sometimes of, you know, don't I want to model the real world by having a class hierarchy where, you know, car inherits from vehicle and sedan inherits from car and all this kind of thing. Well, yeah, you can. But Matz has said, and this is just kind of one quote, it represents a number of things that he's talked about often, and that is that the hierarchy isn't that crucial in Ruby, partly because objects can sort of go their own way. And what one way to look at the hierarchy is really that even though it's kind of, you know, a top-to-bottom hierarchy, it's really just a bunch of classes that are all kind of sharing and implementing, you know, sharing the task of implementing something. You know, you can kind of see it in between a little bit. It's not that you can't model hierarchies or shouldn't or whatever, but it's, I think, instructive to think of it in that slightly more flattened way. And objects embody the character of Ruby. One of my favorite Matz quotes, this I think was from the keynote at the first or second conference in the United States, where he said, Ruby is dynamic like human nature. And that sums it up. I think that's really cool. Okay. So, how is all this brought about in Ruby? It's brought about through singleton classes, and I want to talk a little bit about this, because among other things, singleton classes and singleton methods are a kind of traditional stumbling block for people learning Ruby. And again, you know, people in this room, I think, are at different points in their learning of Ruby. Oh good, I can start now. So I want to talk, you know, in a fair amount of depth about singleton classes and singleton methods. Now, some of this terminology is kind of my homemade terminology, and some of it isn't, and I'll try to tell you which is which. All right, very important. All methods live in a class or module. We sometimes talk sort of informally. We'll say something like, you know, this object has a name method or something like that. When you really want to get down to it, objects don't have methods. Classes and modules are containers of methods. Objects have the knowledge of how to walk a search path through relevant classes and modules to find a method. So it's not a crime if you say this object has a method, but don't cling to that too much, because it's not actually really the fully accurate way to put it. Now, in terms of singletons and objects, every object has what I think of as its birth class. Now, this is not an official term, but I've found it useful. Particularly because the birth class is, you know, like string or vehicle or whatever it may be, that's the class that can spawn other objects. In other words, your object is an instance of a class, and that class, in sometimes it's engineered so it doesn't, but in most cases, that class can also have arbitrarily many other instances. An object singleton class, on the other hand, is brought into being just for this object. It's like, you know, a kind of backpack that this one object wears that has a bunch of methods in it that nobody else has access to. The singleton class comes first in the method lookup path. In other words, priority is given to those, to the methods in the singleton class. Now, singleton methods, it follows logically, singleton methods are the methods that get defined in an object singleton class. And with one exception, which we'll look at a little bit later, singleton methods, if I'm an object and I have a singleton method, by definition that means I get to call that method and no other object does. With one exception that we'll talk about later. But basically that's what's implied by that. This is my method and only I can call it. Now, the key thing here is that the principle is the important thing. The key thing is that the principle is the key thing. In other words, the basic principle is that Ruby objects are dynamic, that they are not constrained by their birth class, that the list of instance methods that a class confers upon the object is not necessarily the end of the story for that object during its lifespan. How it's brought about is, in a sense, secondary. In other words, as long as that principle holds, it may be implemented in within Ruby in one way, it may be implemented in another way. And Matz has said this too. And this is a quote from Matz. This, you want to read it? No, I won't try to do your voice. I assume your, this was from a mailing list, right? I assume your question is why there's no method to obtain singleton class. This came back to a Ruby change request from me and many other people, I might add, who really, really want, please, really want this method that would be called singleton class, where you can just ask the object for its singleton class object. And Matt, in discussing this, which we have, you know, at various points, saying there's no real need for it, and such a method is highly connected to the current implementation, meaning the current implementation of how objects get their per-object behavior. In other words, if I'm interpreting this comment and others correctly, the fact that objects get their per-object behavior by having a class of their own, that's just kind of the way it's rigged. But the main thing is that they do have their own behavior. And it, you know, Matz has reserved the right to, you know, re-engineer that at some point, as long as that principle is held. So the goal is that objects are able to branch away from their original behaviors, their original state, their original sort of profile from when they were created. All right, how do you do it? How do you make objects be what you want them to be, even if it's not the same as the way they were born? Well, basically, you add methods to the singleton class. That's what it's there for, by definition. If you get into that singleton class, you add an instance method, and the object whose singleton class it is will then be able to call that method. Now, you can also, or this is kind of two ways of saying the same thing, you can extend an object with one or more modules. In other words, you can use sort of existing modules to add functionality to an object. And of course, if you do it that way, you can extend many objects if you want to with the same modules. In other words, you don't literally have to kind of write sort of inline the method for every single object. Okay, now, how do you add methods to a singleton class? Well, how do you add methods to any class? There's a couple of ways, but usually you use the class keyword. You open up a class definition block, you say class vehicle, you know, def number of wheels or whatever, right? The singleton class is no different. That's a really important point. In, you know, 7.5 years of using Ruby and seeing people learning Ruby, this is one of the hardest things for people to get. And once they get it, it's like, oh yeah, that's simple. The singleton class is a class. You add methods to classes by opening up a class definition, and that's exactly what you do in the case of a singleton class. Now here we have at the top a person class, and I say class person. And I define, you know, this is just kind of, you know, toy code here, but define greet, put as hello. And now I'm going to create David. David is new person. And now I want to add a singleton method to David. It's actually going to be an override of the original greet method. So I go into the singleton class of that object. This is accomplished using the double less than sign. In other words, instead of a constant like person or string, I use the double less than sign, which one of my trainees recently called the way less than sign, which I think is really cool. So you use the way less than operator to get into the class of the singleton class of the object. This notation really does, you know, kind of hold people up a little bit, but it's just the class keyword. You're just opening a class, but the class that you're opening happens to be the singleton class of the object David. So now, when I say David.greet, it will in fact say hi instead of hello. I didn't put a little bubble with hi there, but that's what it will do. And that's because it's going to look for the method called greet, and it's going to find it in the singleton class. It will never, that object will never bother to look for it in the person class because it doesn't need to. Now, another way to do this very handily, and it's basically interchangeable with the way less than operator thing. But here I have essentially the same code for the first six lines or whatever it is. And then instead of class less than David, I kind of just hit it right away. I just say def David.greet. Now, What this will do is it will put a method called greet in the singleton class of the object David. In other words, I'm just using essentially a different notation. They're not quite interchangeable. I probably could come up with an exact example of this. It never seems to really bite me particularly, but there are some subtle differences in terms of, because you're going in a different class scope or not in this case. So there's slight differences in the way constants are resolved, but I believe that's the only difference. And I mean, it's not that it's not worth knowing, but for the most part, in most cases, if you want to, you can use either notation to add a method to a singleton class. Now, if you want your object to benefit from everything inside a particular module, so here we're loosening up a little. We're going to put things in a module, and then we want the object to be able to have access to those. But again, just this object, right? We're not mixing the module into the object's class. We just want the object, David, to have access to the instance methods in this module. So here we have module M. Module M, and we define greet once again, and this time I'm going to say David equals person.new, and then I'm going to say David.extend M. Now I have to tell you, extend is, I mean, basically what it does is it bestows upon this one object access to this module. Extend, I think, is one of the coolest and least appreciated things in Ruby, and I'll have a little more to say about it as we go along. But it gives you, it's an incredibly fine-grained thing where you can say, you know, I'm not going to mix this module into a class, I just want it available to one object at a time. There's some really important repercussions to that. All right, a little bit about method lookup. I mentioned before that objects don't have methods. Objects have the knowledge of how to go find methods. So let's just look a little bit kind of graphically at, you know, such as my wonderful graphics are, at how this works. We have, again, class person, very unimaginative example, but it will do. Now, if I define greet in the person class, and then I create my new person, and I say David.greet, it's going to find it in its class. Now, I'm just looking to see how my dotted lines. Yeah, you can see I've got solid line for a class, dotted line or gray line for a singleton class, which you'll see in a second. So it's, the object is just going to go, okay, where am I going to find greet? Oh, it's in my class. It's in my birth class, so to speak. It's in the class person. Fine. And end of story. It can now call greet. Whoops, sorry, wrong way. Now, what happens in the case where we add greet to the singleton class of David? What happens is the original method is still up there in the old class, in person, in the person class. But the object never gets there because now I've put an override, a new version of greet in the singleton class of the object using that class arrow notation. So when the object goes and looks for greet, it's going to find it in its singleton class, and it never has to go any further. So it's never going to have to go to the original class. It can, by the way, if you call super in your new greet, it'll go and call the next one up in the chain. But in the simple case, it just executes the first one it finds, and that would be that one. Now, in the case of a module, what actually happens is I say David extend M. Now, the module is a diamond-shaped symbol, and in there I've defined a method, greet. And what happens this time is the object, again, goes on the hunt for the method. And this time it's not in the singleton class, because this time I didn't define it there. But by doing extend, what I've done is I have mixed the module M into my object singleton class. Let me say that again. I have mixed the module M into my object's singleton class. What that means, whenever you mix in a module, whenever you say, you know, class, string, include, enumerable, whatever, what happens is you're adding a new link to the method lookup chain for the objects. The module is being placed into the search path that the object is going to use when it looks for a method. So what I've done with extend, I put a module in the object search path, and it's actually going to be right after. It'll look in the singleton class down at the bottom. It doesn't find greet. It looks in the module that was mixed into the singleton class, and it does find greet. And so it executes that. And again, it never gets to the original one because it doesn't need to. It's already found one. So object, if you look at, I mean, this is pretty much the same code except where the arrow, where the big arrow is. On the left, David.extendM and class arrow David include M. Those are basically equivalent. In other words, extend means include into the object singleton class. Now, a couple of limitations are just sort of points that you should know. Fixnums don't have singleton classes, I'm going to talk about the terminology separately, but the error that you'll get at least through Ruby 1.8 is no virtual class for fixnum. Floats don't have singleton methods. You can create a singleton class for a float, but every float, and Koichi was talking about this before, every float is basically a new object. In other words, unlike integers, floats are, they're basically kind of wrappers around values rather than immediate values. So if you add to the singleton class of 1.3 and then you expect when you type 1.3 something's gonna happen, it's the second 1.3 is actually a new object, so it doesn't work. No singleton class for literals, which makes sense because the next one, you can add something to the singleton class of a literal. What I mean is you can't do def string dot x. You can't put a literal string in that position. You can add to a literal singleton class. I can't think of any way that would make any sense to ever do, because the literal just appears on the screen and disappears, so you can never call the method anyway because it's a literal. So you haven't saved it anywhere. So some objects, there's certain limitations and caveats about which objects have this, but it's pretty much, other than that, mostly throughout the whole thing. A little bit about naming, and I'm not going to go into, really, if you ever have 6 spare months on your hands and you want to learn about all the exchanges on the Ruby mailing lists about this subject, that would be about how long it would take to read all of it. Now, the most general term is the singleton class. People use a lot of other terms. Meta class, people use meta class sometimes just for, sort of quoting myself here, sometimes just for singleton classes of class objects. That kind of makes, again, it's a whole sort of other avenue of debate about this, but I've never thought of singleton classes as particularly meta. I mean, they're just class objects that get created in a certain way. So I don't really like the term meta class. It also has meanings from other languages that are not exactly a good fit. Virtual class, Mats, am I right in saying that the term virtual class, it was in error messages in 1.8, but is it gone now? Or do you still use that term? It was gone when I wrote this slide. I think I grepped for it. So. It's a rhetorical question. I think virtual. Again, I don't think of them as really virtual. I mean, they're real. They're actual objects. So I'm not sure that virtual is the best term. Nobody knows what the best term is, and I don't claim to. But then you get things like eigenclass, which we all thought was sort of a joke at first, but it has a following. People. People use it some. I had suggested own class, which is just sort of English for icon class. But anyway, you actually have to know this. You have to know that there's a long and rather dreary history of people arguing about the right name, making up names. Singleton is wrong. This icon class is better. This is virtual. It's not virtual. You actually have to know this because if you ever sort of chat or participate in mailing lists, you need to know that everybody's talking about the same thing, even though they use 6 different terms. So it's important to know that there is this, perhaps unfortunately, this history of kind of ad hoc naming. Okay, so back to the mechanics of per object behavior. And the question, When should you do it? This is not something, you know, real, honestly, you as a Ruby programmer, you don't sit around, you know, 16 hours a day writing defdavid.greet or whatever. I mean, you know, it's a somewhat specialized thing, and there's certain reasons to do it and certain reasons not to. So I'm going to look at just three major use cases. The first one is class methods. Now, if you have class, I actually have an example. Well, I'll run the class methods. Also using per object behavior to avoid changing core Ruby dynamically. And third, adding methods based on dynamically determined names. So, class methods. If you have, like here, vehicle, car, whatever, right? Look at this. Class car, the top left, right? Class car, def car dot brands. And I listed four just to represent, you know. This typical class method, right? If you want to list all the brands of cars, you're not going to make it an instant, you know, you're not going to ask a Volvo, what are all the brands of cars, right? Why would it know, right? You would ask the car class. The car class is kind of the, you know, the overseer of information about cars in general. So, okay, def car.brands. Well, that looks an awful lot like defdavid.greet. And sure enough, what you're really doing is you're adding a singleton method to the object car, which is an object of the class class. Right? Did the tone of voice work? It's the class class. Right? In other words, it's a class, it's an instance of class, it's a class object. So here I've also just kind of, you know, peppered the screen with different ways of doing this. You can say if you're inside the class definition, as in the upper right, class car, you can say def self.brands because self is the object car. The self at the top level or the outside level of a class definition is the class object. Class less than self, def, and then do it as an instance method in the singleton class of the class object. And then if the car class exists already, this is the lower left, you don't have to reopen the car class at all. You can just say class arrow arrow car, and you're in the singleton class of the class car object. Now, this is the earlier I said singleton methods are for an individual object only, but that there's one exception. This is the exception, and it's, I think, actually a very justifiable one. If I define car.brands, and then I inherit from car, class sedan inherits from car, even though the object sedan and the object car are not the same object, they're two different class objects, nonetheless, sedan gets to call the methods that I defined in a singleton manner on the object car. Now, the reason for this is that if you didn't inherit class methods, that most of them would be kind of useless. In other words, a lot of class methods are really kind of hierarchy methods, and they're not, you know, if you insisted, like, well, these two classes are different objects, so if I define brands on directly as a car object, as a car method, how can sedan call it? It's a different object. The answer is that this is just kind of a design decision, and I think it's a good one. But it is the only time that any object can call another object singleton methods. It's also, by the way, why people sometimes don't like the word singleton method, because if two objects are calling it, how can it be singleton? That's where you'll find some people referring to singleton methods for most objects, or singleton class for most objects, and then meta class, if the object happens to be a class like sedan or car, just finding a different term for its singleton class, meta class, just to make the point that it's designed a little differently. Okay, the second use case that I mentioned was to avoid changes to core Ruby. Now, this is, you know, Matt's touched on the idea of changing core Ruby before, and he was talking about selector namespaces. This is something we've actually been talking about. I mean, we in the, you know, my generation, the post-pickaxe generation, something that's been, you know, discussed and talked about and troubleshooted since, you know, since I started using Ruby. And I think it's a big enough issue that it's not something that could be sort of addressed in a minor release. And so that's why I think Matt's is kind of looking at 2.0 to deal with this. The problem being, of course, that if you change a method in the core language, it's global. In other words, if I change the behavior of, for example, string G sub bang, right? That's G. I know it's kind of got that stupid thing across it, but basically, the method G sub bang is it does a global substitution. In other words, it does a substitution throughout a string, and it puts the changed string back in the original object. In other words, it changes a string in place permanently. Now, if there is no difference, if you say just, you know, G sub X with C and there's no X in your string, nothing happens, G sub bang will return nil. G sub without the exclamation point will return the string whether it's gotten changed or not. G sub bang will return nil. This troubles some people who want to chain it. You know, if you say G sub bang da 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 dot split or something, if you end up with nil, you can't call split on nil, so you have to test whether it worked and all this kind of thing. Okay, so it's actually pretty easy using the alias technique that Matt's talking about. It's pretty easy. You say, you know, alias old G sub bang. I don't actually need to make those symbols because it's a keyword, but I did. And then I override, say def G sub bang, and this is all in class string. And I'm going to say old G sub bang with the same arguments or self. In other words, if no change is made, don't return nil, return the string. So I can put it in method chaining and so on. Well, if you do that, you have to be warned that any library that you use that might have depended on this, and there are ways, you know, people sometimes do until or while G sub bang, you know, actually looking for the nil result, so to break a loop. If you don't have the nil result, you may like it better, but you're not going to like it when you go into an infinite loop because someone who wrote a library you're using is using it the way it's documented. So this is where per object behavior can protect the core functionality that you really don't want to change when you don't have to. And here, what I've done is I've got a module called G sub bang changer. And what I've done is I've hooked into a method called extended. This method, I did not make up its name. It's basically, if you in a module you define def self extended, this is a callback. It's going to get called automatically whenever an object extends with this module. And the object will be passed to the method, to the extended method, as the sole argument. So what I'm saying here is if any object extends itself with G sub bang changer, then that object should undergo, in its singleton class, the change of the behavior of G sub bang. So what I'm doing is I'm shrinking the scope of this. I'm saying, you know, don't change every string throughout my running Ruby interpreter. Just change this string based on its ability to be different from other strings. And so then I say string equals ABC. Now if I say string G sub bang Z Y, right, there's no Z in that string, so I get back nil because nothing changed. However, if I say string extend G sub bang changer, and now I say string G sub bang Z with Y, it again there's no Z in it, but this time it gives me back the self, the original string, instead of nil. This is why I say extend is a really fine-grained and important thing. And it's probably expensive in terms of processing to do a lot of extending and so on, but still, before you open up string or array or hash or anything like that, think about, you know, how many strings, arrays, hashes do you need to behave in a particular way? Why not just take those and extend them with a module? Leave the rest of them as they were originally documented, originally engineered, and so on. Okay, the other use case that I wanted to mention for per object behavior is dynamically adding methods. And I'm actually going to Let's see. Is this gonna? Can you see a terminal? Rather huge terminal. Wait, let me. Is that big enough type? Okay, it got bigger when I did the. Oh, sorry. That's not what I meant to do. I'm wrestling with the usual sort of two screen thing. Okay, I have here, it's pretty simple, just a little thing called Mini OpenStruct. Have some of you used OpenStruct before? Yeah, it basically, OpenStruct is a Ruby standard library class, and you create instances of it, and well, I'll show you very quickly. For instance, you say require OStruct, then I say, you know, A equals OpenStruct.new. And now if I say like A.x equals 10, show me A.x. A.name equals David, right? In other words, what I'm doing is I'm getting automatic, whenever I call an unknown method, I'm getting an automatic attribute. I don't have to say accessor name, accessor x, and so on. It just, it knows. It does it dynamically. So my mini OStruct does somewhat the same thing. And in fact, I have my little test bed here. You know, test dynamic attributes. A equals my OStruct.new. A.x equals 1. Assert equals 1. A.x. And just do it again to make sure. And if I run my file, sure enough, it all works. Now, what did I do? What I did, and I'm actually going to do a little rewrite or refactoring of one of these methods, but I wanted to show the slightly unnecessarily long version just to give you an idea, and then we can actually shorten it. So I've got class, oh, I'm sorry, first I have my, this is the method that I've been asking Mats for 5 years, and that I always write by hand, and we all have to write it out. And that here, def singleton, what I'm doing is basically I'm saying for any object, I want the singleton class as an object back. And this formula, class, arrow, self, and just evaluates to the class I'm in. It's just a technique for getting hold of the actual singleton class programmatically. So here, I'm not gonna go sort of word by word through this, but basically what I'm doing is, I've written a method called create attra pair, right? And what that does is it takes a string or symbol and it creates a, using this kind of metaprogramming of going into the singleton class using class eval, and the advantage of class eval over just kind of a class definition block is that class eval takes a code block, and therefore inside that code block, I can see the local variables. For example, m, right? My local variable m will actually sort of permeate into this code block. So down here, I can use m as a local variable. I look for the equal sign. If the equal sign is there, I define a... did I do this backwards? No. No, I did it right. Yes. Right, if the equal sign isn't there, it's a slightly arcane way to do it, but the equal sign wasn't there, then define the get method, right, the reader method, if there was an equal sign, define the set method. And now I've now written method missing, right, which is the hook for unknown methods. What I say is, if you call a method missing, if you call a missing method on my object, it's going to create an attra pair for that object. So now, and actually, the name is a little bit misnamed because it's really, it creates one or the other. But by the time you've referred to both of them, it creates both of them. So here, if you initialize it with an attra, it will create all of them. I don't do that here, but I basically just use the dynamic functionality. Now, I wanted to make the point also that all of this could we're just going to take off an equal sign if it's there, and now I'm just piggybacking on attra accessor, right? As I said, I wanted to show you the sort of excessively long way, but in fact, this is, I mean, look at this. This is a little implementation of OpenStruct. It's not feature complete,
But, you know, I mean, this is why this stuff is so powerful in Ruby, because, I mean, first of all, the code required to write it is powerful, and then what it can then do is powerful. I mean, Ruby, I really like Ruby. Ruby's cool. So let this be a lesson to you. And here, actually, it's now correctly named, because now it does actually create both in one method call, so that's good. Okay, so dynamically adding methods is another, the third of my use cases for this. Now, what are the ramifications? Well, of per object behavior and adding methods to singleton classes and so on. It means that the type of an object is or can be different from its class. I think of the class type distinction in Ruby as kind of the nature and nurture distinction, right? Every object has is born with a certain nature, but that's not the whole story. The object then lives a life during which things can happen to it and changes can be made, and that's the nurture. Now, there is, of course, a huge sort of practice and history of using the word type and class interchangeably. In Ruby, I'd strongly encourage you not to do that, because you kind of slam the door on some interesting ways in which you can think about the type of an object, like duck typing, for example. So type and class really kind of part ways. If you think of type as an object is of the type, well, yeah, like I say here, it's kind of sort of a circle. You know, an object is of the type. The type that objects like this are of, or something. So yeah, it's kind of a circular thing. But again, the class of an object is not the whole story, and it's important to remember that. And yes, you can check. If object is a person, then do this and that. And then, you know, there are times when you want to do that. If you really want to hardwire the name of a class in somewhere, it's done more in the core actually. But really, I think in the service of sort of bootstrapping the whole Ruby system. And once the Ruby system's running, it's better, I think, to lean toward duck typing, which basically means just ask objects to do stuff. Don't worry if it's a person or a car. That's the object's business, you know, what class it came from. The only thing you need to know is what the object can do now, at the moment you need it to do something. So, just a couple words about by way of conclusion. As I said, I think this stuff is interesting, and I think that it too often gets dismissed. This is true of all the sort of metaprogramming in Ruby. I really kind of get my fill pretty quickly of hearing people say, don't do that, or if you do that, you're gonna shoot yourself in the foot with rope and all this kind of thing. Basically, these are just techniques. Learn them. They're just sitting there in the language along with all the other techniques. You obviously need to be educated about what's going to happen if you do them. But, as I've tried to show you, there's times where there's alternatives that are, like changing the core, that you don't have to bring about disaster and running with scissors and all that. Just do what's necessary only, right? It's an interesting topic to me because it also kind of connects in with a lot of other things about Ruby. So that's a wrap. Thank you very much. I think I've actually gone like a minute over. I don't know if I'm allowed to take questions. What?
Questions
is good. It's good? Okay. A couple of questions, if there are any. Yes. I don't have, do we have a microphone for... can you yell?
Yeah. So I've seen a number of projects defining the method an object to get a method class. A single class. So what do you think about that?
Sorry, to...
what do you think about defining the method an object?
Yeah. Yeah. I did it in my... Oh, wait. Didn't I do... I did that in my... Right? You mean this?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. It's what?
It's cheating.
No, it's not cheating. It's just, I mean, you know, the singleton class is there. It's an object. I actually do, you know, I've been advocating for a long time because people do write these six lines over and over, whatever it is, seven, over and over again. I respectfully disagree with Matt's that there isn't a need for this. I think it would declutter a lot of things. I think if I'm remembering correctly, part of the problem was what to call it, because this goes back to this very vexed issue of what is this thing, this singleton meta virtual thing. And so I think that that's part of why it hasn't happened. But no, I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. I don't, you know, I mean, you're basically just getting a class, you know, you handle class objects as first class objects all the time. So the fact that this one, the role of this particular class object is to be the singleton class of something, it's still a class, it's still an object. So I think it's perfectly fine. Anything else? Oh wait, was that one? Yes.
In your example with cars,
yeah.
Is the Volvo singleton class a subclass of cars singleton class? This is why we can call singleton class?
I think it was sedan. Is that the one you mean? I think
Volvo, sedan,
right,
yes.
Right. Volvo was one of the names I used in the...
So we can call sedan.brand?
This one, you mean?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, actually, the way this works is that the singleton class of sedan is a subclass of the singleton class of car. So you have the hierarchy of car, sedan, and then you have this kind of ghost hierarchy of, you know, singleton class of car, singleton class of sedan. And these, so when you ask sedan for brands, it goes and looks in its singleton class, doesn't find it, and then goes up and finds it. That's how it's designed, which I think is really very elegant. And that's why I say it doesn't, it does make the term singleton a little bit awkward, because these are, you know, but in terms of the, as an exception to the rule, I think it's very justifiable and very nicely implemented. Okay. All right, I think that's it. Thank you very much.